welcome.
This is Big Planet Comics Podcast, you guys.
Yeah, it is.
Episode 48.
What? That's a big number.
Yeah, we're all here. We're here to do this thing for you.
Yes. Yes.
Not
we
for us. We don't even listen to it.
No.
No.
No. I mean, we hear it when it happens.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And this is our podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can go on Facebook and get the things there.
You can tweet it somehow.
Tweet it. I got an actual email from Dave French who pointed out that we also have a newsletter if you want to get on with that.
We do have a newsletter if you want to get on
that.
Get on that.
You can sign up on our webpage.
Yep, yep.
Which is bigplanetcomics.com, what Jared just said.
Sure is.
And also... Yeah, at Big Planet Comics, we should say that because we didn't say that.
That our tweet?
That's our tweet. Tweeter.
It's our tweeter.
All right, so, what do we usually talk about at the beginning here? What's been going on, you guys?
Let's see. I have been eating a lot of cake.
That's delicious. True.
Currently eating cake?
Yeah, we have a special cake delivery today. I finally saw Attack the Block, which is amazing.
What?
So you hadn't seen it?
No, I'll be saying Believe a lot, though.
It's really good.
It's like low-budget... A British sci-fi movie about aliens invading a slum of London, and it's fantastic.
You wouldn't guess it's low budget.
No, the aliens in it are so cool looking. They're like, bad. I mean, I saw Prometheus, and they're cool, and the aliens in that. So
nice.
I just finished the third Hunger Games book, and it's really terrible.
Is it?
I'm impressed you finished.
It's really bad.
Yeah,
it's really,
that's
really.
I'm looking
really
forward
bad.
To the movie to see if they can fix it.
Well, there's some stuff in there that's like really actiony that'll definitely be better as a movie. All
right.
Maybe?
So they're just going to drop the rest of the whole book.
Yeah, just everything. But anyway, whatever. What about you, Nick? What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Well, not much as usual. I don't do anything.
Did you go to a party? A rager?
Yeah, I went to a few parties this week.
That's good.
Did some karaoke.
That's good.
I managed to sing No Diggity.
Nice.
That's amazing. That's a classic.
Well, if nobody has any news, should we do some news?
Yeah.
Let's do some news.
Let's do it.
All right. We have one piece of news. You guys ready for this news?
Yeah.
DC Comics has canceled 4 books.
What?
Those books are Justice League International, Resurrection Man, Captain Atom, and Voodoo.
Really?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by Justice League International. I feel like that is a book that sells okay, I thought.
It's got Batman in it, so that's a plus, but I was surprised they canceled
Boob-Doo.
Out of this list,
Boob-Boobs.
Resurrection Man is the only one I'm really kind of like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
The only one you read, you mean?
Well, the only one that was
a good start.
Good. The other ones are pretty terrible. Justice League International is really bad.
See, I read the very beginning of it, and I thought it was okay.
Yeah. It stinks.
Yeah. Okay. So, but there are replacements for these that seem better.
Of course.
They are Talon, written by Scott Snyder, with co-writer James Tynion IV.
So, co-written by Scott Snyder.
And artist Guillaume March, who was drawing Catwoman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I was about to say.
Why would you move? Why? Anyway.
That's weird.
But anyway, Scott Snyder's good. Talon is should be an interesting character coming
especially
out
after the revelations this week.
Yeah, which we won't tell people because some people might not want to know that.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Revelations
in Batman.
And the second book is Sword of Sorcery, written by Christy Marks, who I'll tell you who that is in a second, and drawn by Aaron Lopresti. So Sword of Sorcery is going to be, at least part of it's going to be Amethyst of Gemworld, which some people might remember from the olden days of the 80s.
I only know of her.
And Christy Marks is the creator of Gem and the Holograms.
Wow.
Yeah, so that seems kind of like that might be interesting, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's at least
they're trying it, yeah.
At least they're trying something new.
Yeah.
And at least, hey, that's one female creator now.
At least none of these.
Two?
Yeah.
Two. There's still Gail Simone.
She's still working with
us? Yeah.
She's still there.
Yeah, right. She's still doing Batgirl.
No. There you go.
And then there is The Phantom Stranger.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is by Dan Didio.
Ooh.
And Brent Anderson. So so Dan Didio now writing 2 books because OMAC is...
OMAC got canceled.
OMAC is complete.
Yeah. NOMAC.
NOMAC.
And then Team 7 by Justin Jordan.
Our Justin Jordan.
Can we call him our Justin Jordan?
We've claimed him.
Well, we did interview him on the podcast. You guys probably know Justin Jordan from his work on The Strange Tale of Luther Strode.
Yep.
Or Hackslash.
It's pretty interesting.
It's yeah. So, and Jesus Marino is going to do our. He's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It seems like they're replacing some not great books with some potentially better books.
Yeah. Hopefully.
This is DC. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Although the way these are launching in September to celebrate the year anniversary... is they're putting out 52 number zeros.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
what?
Yeah, yeah. So that's happening. They're already in hot water over the Catwoman cover. Have you guys seen this?
No. Mm-hmm.
Where I guess, you know, typically on comics covers, when you have a woman and you want to exploit her on the cover, you
show her boobs and her butt at the same time.
Right, but usually she's standing with her butt and then she turns to the side, yep, so you can see her boobs. This one is Catwoman and she's diving through the air. Her boobs are in front of her and her back is arched so much that her butt is above her head.
Nice.
She's an acrobat, right?
Yeah, aww. So you know, props to Gia March for figuring that out, I guess. But it's also just like the silliest, stupidest thing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, but so all these zeros, they're going to finish up these series with number zeros and have number zeros for the new series. So I don't know how
the ones that are getting canceled are getting a zero.
Yeah, issue? Yeah, they're getting, okay, a zero issue as well, I think. Yeah, so it's strange.
The,
yeah,
last hurrah.
Indeed. All right, so that's all of our news, you guys. What do you guys think about all this news?
It was fascinating.
All right. All right, so should we just do some viewer mail then?
Let's, sure, do it.
All right. I only have one new song, so we're going to use that for viewer mail as well. All right, so here's our first viewer mail. It is from Matt.
Hello, Matt.
Matt the P1 listener, it says. He says, yo.
What up?
No response to that, yo, you guys? He says, first off, I really love the podcast.
Oh.
Well, thanks, Matt.
Ours?
Yeah, I think he's talking about ours. secondly, I miss the sound effects, especially the horn sound played for exciting announcements.
Wow.
Like what?
Yeah. I think we have an exciting announcement.
Do you want to make an exciting announcement?
Yeah.
I'll make an exciting announcement. The horn's back! well, there you go, Matt. That's for you.
Fix the sound effects.
I also have a sound effect for when Jared says things.
Like what?
Boo.
Wait, what would you say, Jared?
I don't know anything.
Yeah, and that's everything. All the rest is not anything. But then he has an actual question as well. He says, lately, I've seen you have some used graphic novels on your shelf. How are these priced? And are you currently buying used graphic novels to sell? It's a very specific question just to our store.
Applies to the Vienna store, the Vienna branch of the Big Planet Comics Empire.
But they're 50% off.
Yep.
And we are buying. We're kind of picky.
Yes.
Because we are jerks, as you know, if you listen to this podcast.
So we will judge you if you bring in, like, your Amethyst of Princess of Jim World collections.
We will judge you as a champion of the earth.
Yeah, you'll be like, where did you find that?
Yeah.
Please, but, bring those in.
Yeah, yeah, and we're buying them. We do, like, 25% store credit or 10% cash money. Yep.
Cash money on that barrel.
And all that gets reported to the government and stuff, right? I assume. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Also cash for gold.
Well, yeah, and then he says, thanks, dudes, Matt, the P1 listener. I want to say thank you to you, dude.
And thank you, and what does P1 listener mean?
I don't know, player one listener?
Send us another.
Maybe it's like P90X, or maybe it's like Project P100, the untitled Platinum Games production for the Wii U.
Nah, it's probably not that.
No, it's probably what it is. We're just going to assume that's what it is. All right, next question. it says, from listening to the podcast, I know you have... Oh, this is from Pivo, by the way.
I was like, where did this come from? We have two? That's excellent.
No, this is from people. We have three.
Really?
I don't know if we'll have a very good answer to this third one, but here's the second one. From listening to the podcast, I know you have a lot of beefs with the editorial direction of DC Comics.
What?
What is he even talking about?
You are biased against our reporting biases.
I'd like to hear from someone who is thrilled about the new 52 and why they think DC Comics totally rules. Please invite a true DC fanboy on the podcast to show us all what we're missing. Oh, wait, that was the wrong one.
There you go.
I'm like the worst sound effects guy. We need like Jackie from the Howard Stern Show.
Oh, yeah.
Assuming that guy's still alive. We need him specifically. Not like a Jackie. We need Jackie.
Yeah.
Well, we know that certain people, perhaps editors at a certain company, subdivision of a certain company, listen to this podcast. So if you got any super fans, send them our way.
I don't think we want, like, a fanboy of anything on this podcast, though, right?
Yeah.
I
mean, like... that's a good point.
Don't we... I
would love to hear an intelligent defense of DC Comics, not a fanboy.
Well, not all of them. I'd like to hear an intelligent defense of Deathstroke written and drawn by Rob Liefeld and why that was a good idea.
Yeah, see,
that is a tough one.
I think a lot of people are in the same boat as us right now, thinking that DC is making some not-so-great decisions.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. If there is a true DC fanboy, as Pivo calls them, that wants to send us in some sort of
diatribe,
some rebuttal, some sort of manifesto, just feel free to send that in.
Yeah. Or come to our live show.
Come to our live show.
That would be even better.
On
yeah.
June 27th. You may be the only person here.
And you'll have a microphone to sell us what you think.
All to yourself. okay, so we've got another question here. I read this, and I'm not really sure what the answer to this
Throw
is.
Throw it at
us. This is from John Decker.
Okay.
And John says, in the build-up to AVX, we have seen the future of the Avengers home, in which Cable finds a few X-Men memorabilia, including Gambit's staff. What are the chances that after AVX wraps up, Gambit will be one of the Avengers squad?
Yeah. I'd say 93% because the current Marvel strategy is to make everyone an Avengers or a backup Avenger.
I don't remember that thing with Cable seeing the future.
I don't remember it either. But
me neither.
There is a new.
I'm not saying it didn't happen. I might not have read it.
There is a new ongoing Gambit series coming out. So
is it called Gambit: The Last Avenger?
The current Avenger.
The next Avenger. Well, yeah. So I guess you'll have to find out in the upcoming Gambit series from yep. Marvel Comics.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that's weird because I mean, throwing any mutants into the Avengers has always felt a little suspect.
Well, I don't know. Beast was an Avenger for a long time. A lot of people would consider... And, you know, Scarlet Witch is a mutant. She's been an Avenger for 40 years. Yeah, Wolverine is an Avenger.
Wolverine.
Maybe everybody joins. Maybe all the X-Men become Avengers at the end.
Maybe it's Avengers Island. If everybody's an Avenger, nobody's an Avenger.
That's true.
Okay, so we've got one more question. This is a voicemail.
Wait, so these are four?
We have four questions. Yeah. Well, we actually had five, if you count. Peter from our College Park store sent us a stupid voicemail. Because Peter's an idiot. I know he doesn't actually listen to this show, so it's fine. You're an idiot, Peter.
What did he say?
He was like... why do you guys always talk bad about books that sell well, like Earth 2? And I'd like to hear your explanation for that. And then
because we are a critical show rather than a commercial show.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's like, it made it sound like he was like, how could it be bad? It sells a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Transformers made like billions of dollars.
That's oh, did it?
Yeah. So did Battleship. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen Battleship.
Oh yeah. When are we going to see Battleship again? Battleship. I mean, no, we're not.
Battleship sunk.
Oh
did it?
Yeah.
Oh.
It sunk. Yeah, it was terrible. It did do terribly. But Transformers was like is still one of the highest. Like Transformers 3 is like one of the highest grossing movies of all time.
The third one.
Yeah,
my like, answer
even
to,
after the second one.
That's
yeah,
my
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
That's, oh,
my
wow.
answer to Peter's question is Justin Bieber nail polish.
Yep,
that's my answer.
Yep. That's a good answer.
all right, so we should listen to this voicemail. It's a little quiet. So shut your mouths, guys.
That's really quiet.
Hello, it's Matt from Fairfax. I have a question regarding definitive character stories. So you go at DC and you see all the definitive Batman stories like Dark Knight Returns, like Killing Joke, like Long Halloween. You see definitive Superman stories like Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, like Red Sun, that sort of thing. But when you go to the Marvel side, you don't see a whole lot of definitive stories for their characters. What is the definitive Spider-Man story? What is the definitive Captain America story? What is the definitive Iron Man story? None of these guys have a definitive story like they do on the DC side. Just wondering what you guys think the definitive Marvel stories for their characters are. Thanks.
Thanks for the voicemail.
Yeah. Well, the easiest one is Spider-Man.
Do we need to recap that? Do you think everyone could hear that? Okay?
No, well, yeah, just in case you couldn't hear it, it was a little bit quiet. But
Matt from Fairfax back again. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, back again with a vengeance. No wonder he was asking for that sound effect. I think when I had that before, I used it constantly. And
it is taped to your finger. So.
It's going
to
happen again. No, that's an actual air horn. There's a we got Shabba Ranks in the studio.
Shabba Ranks.
What's up, Shabba?
Shabba.
Yeah, that's what he says. So Matt was basically saying that DC characters have these kind of defining graphic novels like Batman Year One or Killing Joke or
Red Sun
or All-Star
Secret
Superman.
Origin, yeah.
Yeah, so what are those things for Marvel characters who don't seem to have maybe specific books that are so big and closely associated with them, or definitive books, as he calls them?
The thing that's interesting about Marvel is they have a more continuous history, and DC has a lot of relaunches, but they also have a lot of standalone stories. Like, Marvel just hasn't done a really strong graphic novel presence until very recently.
Right, and I think that's kind of what they were attempting to do with these season one books, a couple of which were great, a couple of which were not so great. But I think I think one thing with Marvel is they had a very modern approach to their comics in the 60s, and kind of a lot of their stories that people really remember are those really, really early stories.
Yeah.
Where maybe that's not as true of like Batman and Superman. Like everybody remembers the origin, but.
But nobody remembers, you know, Batman number 7.
Yeah. Like a lot of people wouldn't be able to tell you what happened in like Detective Comics number 28.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, Marvel does have some things like that. They have, like Nick said.
Yeah. Spider-Man has, Craven's Last Hunt.
That was what
which
I was
is kind of the big. The big one for Spider-Man.
And then there are a couple big things, too. Like, I think the death of Gwen Stacy and Green Goblin is a big one. And then...
But that's also kind of, like, a culmination of, like, the first 50 or 60 issues of Spider-Man.
122 issues.
Is that when that happened?
Yeah, it's 121 and 122.
Whew, well, there you go. So that proves the point even more. It's like, it's not a... It's just those first 122 issues were all pretty good, and that was a great... kind of climax to the early
and that's why I think Kraven's Last Hunt kind of stands out. And then right. Marvel kind of started doing these big crossovers earlier, so their big books were like Secret Wars or Infinity Gauntlet. So like these are there are these like, but I guess DC has those too, like Crisis on Infinite Earths and other ones.
Wolverine's got like Old Man Logan. That's pretty good.
Wolverine's got some good ones.
And also Wolverine has the Wolverine miniseries by Chris Claremont, which I would say
I think is
stands
iconic
up
for
there
him.
Yeah, with those things. So
and Daredevil's got a lot too. I think it's more that just Batman and Superman are like such iconic characters. Like you aren't really throwing out any Wonder Woman stories like that. I think there's so many people have done stories with them who love the characters, and so it's just if you have a person who's like, I want to tell
and then
you know, the Dark Knight story in the future.
Also, like X-Men have God Loves, Man Kills, which is like a pretty
a
big
one.
Definitive.
Yeah,
kind of
and Days of Future Past, I think as well. I mean, that's in the comic, but it's still like it's its own kind of standalone story. But I don't know. Yeah, DC. I mean, that's one thing that DC's always been really good at. I wish they would get back to it a little bit more. And they've tried. I mean, Superman Earth 1 was a huge success for them. I wasn't a huge fan of the book, but. I mean, it was a big book for them, and then Joker was pretty big for them,
right?
And then there's the Batman Earth 1 thing coming out.
Death by Design.
Oh yeah,
that was great.
Death by Design was really good too.
But but like all the Frank Miller Daredevil stuff, he did a couple like Man Without Fear
and
like
Born
retelling
Again,
the origin story. You know, like they've did some iconic ones for that.
Yeah. I also think the 80s were like a bigger time for graphic novels and. Were also a really good time creatively for DC, so they had guys like Alan Moore, you know, writing stuff like The Killing Joke, or Frank Miller writing Batman Year One.
Yeah, there's also Dazzler the movie.
There's also Dazzler the movie. There's also, I mean, it's maybe a more minor character, but Death of Captain Marvel is a really great standalone graphic
really
novel.
Yeah.
Of course, it's not in print because nobody cares about Captain Marvel. But
there are a couple others like the Iron Man Demon in a Bottle storyline.
Yeah, I think that's
Extremis, a new one by Warren Ellis, relatively new. Huh.
Captain America maybe has a little bit less of that stuff. Yeah. I mean, there's Man Wolf. Where Captain America
Cap
turns
Wolf.
Into Cap Wolf. Cap yeah,
Wolf.
Sorry, Man Wolf is a totally different thing. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah. Sort of,
I think it does.
Yeah,
not even sort of.
No.
Question answered. All right, so not a lot of books again this week, but that's okay. I think we were getting to a point where we were reviewing so much stuff
that
we were
comics.
Like just getting too grumpy. So so now it's time. For reviews.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right, up first for reviews, I have to cough really bad. We have Bad Medicine #1 by Nunzio DeFilippis, Christina Weir, and Christopher Mitten.
So the interesting thing about this is another of the Free Comic Book Day launches that they put out. An issue for free, and then they reprinted it as because it's the #1 of an ongoing series. So for the four poor people who didn't get it on Free Comic Book Day, you can still pick it up. But #2, the continuation of the story, also came out this week.
Did you say for the poor people?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Like the poor sad. People that didn't get it.
Oh, I thought you meant just like homeless people.
Yeah, you're so classist, Kevin.
Yeah, for the broke people that couldn't afford the Free Comic Book Day.
I'm not classist. I thought you were classist. Jared's classist. All right.
Aww.
Go on.
I can't. I've been horned out.
All right, so Bad Medicine #1.
Yeah.
Done.
Is basically...
I feel like you guys are like making awkward silences on purpose because you want me to use the crickets, so don't do that. I will use them when they're appropriate.
All right. They're always appropriate.
All right, go on, Jared.
All right, so anyway, so that's the thing. So you get issue 1 and 2 came out this week. So basically, Bad Medicine The first two issues form a storyline, and then it looks like issue three will continue with some of these characters in a new storyline. So basically, that's what I thought was interesting about this, that this is an ongoing series that seems to deal with scientific / science fiction mysteries.
It's like medicine-related mysteries, right. Kind of like a little bit of House mixed in there.
Like a House mixed with X-Files, I'd say.
With Fringe a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, science out of control.
Yeah, yeah. It's got that kind of Witch Doctor feel to it, which we've talked about on here before. But this first story deals with a body that's found that has what they think is a missing head, but it ends up that the head is just invisible.
Yep. And then from there on, they get this guy who was actually doing research on kind of invisibility using the human brain. And they bring him in to help them find out what's going on, and it leads them to this other doctor, and you know they, you know, solve the case.
Yeah, you know, the government's involved. Yeah. You know, it's got a lot of different levels and characters all trying to work together.
Yeah, but. And then the third character introduced in this is like a kind of a government agent who doesn't believe in any of this stuff. He's you know, he's like the Scully. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
He's like the guy who doesn't believe any of this, even though he's an invisible man like pushes him through a window and stuff. He's like, I didn't see anything, which is really funny.
Yeah,
but yeah, it seems like they're gonna keep going with that same theme. And there's some interesting stuff about like the main character talks to like this woman he accidentally killed
during his experiments.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
I feel like they do a really good job like setting up all these characters right off the bat.
Yeah,
it's certainly an interesting. Like case for them to deal with.
Yeah, and so I mean, even right in when they're first investigating, you get like a sense of who they are and stuff like that. Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool. I thought the art was pretty solid.
I know, like,
you didn't like it. It's Christopher Mitten, who's been drawing Wasteland.
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay.
It's a little weird. It's like really loose and sketchy, but I think it does a good job of getting the point across. On this part.
Maybe it's the coloring. It just I did not like looking at it.
Yeah, the coloring was a little drab, but I mean, you know, in a way that maybe is fitting with the story. But I mean, I could see not liking the art. It's definitely not superb.
Yeah, but I really like the story, so that took me in. But not my kind of art style.
From the writers of Play Ball, which we reviewed.
Oh, really?
That's weird. Right. That is a few months ago. The writers of Play Ball.
They write so many books together.
They do.
They're
like
the best team.
And they write stuff that's all over the place. I feel like this is very different from anything else they've done before,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
So.
Good stuff.
Yeah, no, it's worth checking out. I think people that like stuff like BPRD or Criminal Macabre or
The Goon, maybe.
Fringe.
Yeah. It gets our mediumist recommendation. All right, so should we move on to another book here?
Yes.
All right. Next up, we have Before Watchmen, Silk Spectre, number 1 of 4.
Second.
Oh, so these aren't all 6 issues.
Yeah, I thought they're all going to be 6. Apparently, some are going to be 6 issues, and some are going to be 4, and there's going to be an epilogue issue, standalone, not standalone, but final issue.
Is it called Watchmen?
It is. It's called Watchmen.
It's actually going to be a 12-issue series.
There's going to be a 12-issue maxi series
called
that comes out after this.
Before Watchmen.
Yeah, and it's going to just be exactly the same as Watchmen, but rewritten by Len Wein, and redrawn by
Rob Liefeld.
Rob Liefeld.
During Watchmen.
During Watchmen. All right, so this is the first issue of Silk Spectre. This is Darwin Cook writing again. He also wrote Minutemen. Mm-hmm. And Amanda Connor doing the art.
Woohoo!
When a lot of people saw that Adam Hughes was going to be drawing something, they were like, why isn't he drawing this? But Amanda Connor is perfectly suited to draw a book like this.
It's true.
So what did somebody here think of Before Watchmen? How about you, Jared?
This one I thought was pretty good. Actually, Amanda Connor's art in this did not catch me as much just because it wasn't as like titillating as like some of her art normally is. So it was a lot more grounded, but it was really well done.
I thought her art was like better than anything in this. I don't know.
Wait, what?
I thought her art was better than anything I've seen from her in this.
Oh, really? I don't know. I love the art in the Pro, and those early Power Girl issues I like a lot too. But I thought the art in this was, I thought it was pretty solid.
Yeah, it's just so much more polished in this, I feel.
It's funny that the first thing that we think of to talk about in this is the art, though, because the story is decent. I feel like it has more of its own identity than the Minutemen one.
Right, it definitely does.
And it's about Lori when she was younger, dealing with the fact that her mom was the original Silk Spectre.
Yeah, and she's training her to be like the replacement, but she just wants to be a normal, like, you know, teenager.
Yeah, she's still in high school in this, which I thought was really interesting. And the fact that it's called Silk Spectre is really about both of them.
Right.
That, you know, she's the mother is the original Silk Spectre, and then Lori's going to become the replacement Silk Spectre. There's so much projection of, like, it's just so weird to see like a parent trying to train their child to not only be a superhero but be their replacement, and it was really interesting dynamic on that level.
Especially
that really
with
cool.
everything that the original Silk Spectre dealt with, yeah. like the fact that she would be training her daughter to be her replacement seems really weird. Mm. Yep. And all the sort of stuff she had to go through. And, you know, they deal with some of the stuff that they talk about in Watchmen, like the kind of Tijuana Bibles comics about her mother and stuff, like the porn comics that were made about her and stuff. I don't know. It was actually, I mean, besides the fact that it's a Watchmen book, which kind of still bugs me.
Me too.
And seems pointless. I thought that this was a really solid comic.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It was better than Minutemen, just because it was its own thing.
Yeah, and Minutemen had this was soulless quality.
Yeah, this seemed to reveal. This had more to work with. I think it's just, you know, more interesting characters to work with and more
and
to reveal.
Minutemen had a lot of ground to cover in like a short amount of time too. Yeah. This is like pretty easy, straightforward story, you know, about a mom and her daughter. And
but with all the things I feel like I've seen in superhero books, especially working in a comic store for a while now, it's like I feel like maybe I haven't actually seen this exact story before of like. A mother who's a superhero and her daughter who's becoming a superhero. So, I mean, it's interesting and the art's good. So, I don't know. I feel like this one is pretty solid and will definitely be the best of these Watchmen books.
I don't know.
Well, what's going to, you know.
I don't know.
You throw Azzarello on some crime stuff, I think it could be pretty good.
Yeah, Azzarello's so all over the place for me. He's really doing a good job on Wonder Woman right now, though. So.
That's true.
And Spaceman.
That's true. He is. I keep forgetting about Spaceman.
Yeah,
but yeah, definitely a step up from the first one.
I would say this is the best before Watchmen so far.
It is. Is the comedian next? I believe.
I think so.
Which is
comedian number one is next week,
And that's going to be Brian Azzarello and somebody.
Lee Bermejo? No,
Bermejo's doing the
J.G. Jones.
Jared.
J.G. Jones.
Oh, well, J.G. Jones is a good artist.
Like I said, there's going to be some good stuff coming.
And just a quick mention, like the first issue, just skip the Crimson Corsair thing in the back.
I didn't even read it this time.
It's so bad.
I read it again. I think it's even worse because it's 2 pages long. So he has no time to, or just...
Wasn't the first one 2 pages?
Maybe the first one was longer, but...
No, the first one was 2 pages.
It's just like he doesn't have the storytelling chops. Exactly, like to do... Like 2 pages of comics, like, can you imagine if Alan Moore was doing... whatever. Move on.
It stinks. I didn't even read it. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. But the comic itself, it was all right.
Yeah,
it was good.
Yeah. All right, so up next we've got a book I think we've all been kind of waiting for. This is The Massive Number One by Brian Wood, who you probably know from DMZ or...
Northlanders
or Channel Zero or a million other things.
Yep.
And art by Christian Donaldson, who I haven't seen for a while, but he drew Supermarket, right? Which
he
is
sure did.
The best thing ever.
It's really good.
Did Brian Wood write Supermarket?
I think so.
Oh, wow. I think he did, yeah.
But...
good team.
Yeah, we should talk about Super. We should go back to some old trades every once in a while.
Some classic reviews of stuff that people might have missed.
Yeah, because Supermarket's great. But so The Massive Number One. Now, I'm a little unclear about something because I haven't been keeping up with Dark Horse Presents, which I've been chastised by a couple different people about. But is this collecting the stuff that's in Dark Horse Presents?
So Dark Horse Presents, their anthology title, has had 8-page prequels to The Massive, which is basically a short story focusing on each of the major characters who appear in this first number one issue and like kind of how they meet up with each other, kind of their background story. So it's like the origin story of the individuals.
Oh, that's cool.
So this one's all new.
Cool. So we'll probably see that stuff collected in the trade
paperback.
Yeah, I'm
sure it'll be like the intro to number zero issue or at the back of it. Yeah.
I thought that this, you know, that the I read I think the first one of those, but this story is pretty interesting.
It's a massive success. The story is kind of your not typical.
Typical, you're so wrong.
It's an end of the world story, but a very different one, where like a multitude of disasters occur one after another. And these people are stranded at sea because they were kind of like a Greenpeace type group.
Yeah.
The warriors.
Going out trying to save the environment. And then the environment, you know, basically gets destroyed by who knows what, just random occurrences start happening.
Just sort of all at once. It seems like a lot of global warming of related stuff.
Yeah.
And then maybe some other
ecological catastrophe.
Yeah.
And the earth is no longer.
And so they're out at sea and they're out with another boat. They're like, there are two boats in their fleet or whatever, two big boats. One is the Massive and one is
the Capital, right? Is that what it's called?
The Capital.
Yeah.
And during one of the disasters that starts happening, there's like a huge wave and they lose the Massive, which is the other ship, and all their friends on board. And so they're out on the sea trying to find them, except the sea's filled with like pirates and
still lots of crazy stuff happening.
Yeah, dying whales and all sorts of
crazy.
Plus,
since like, you know, there's basically this huge catastrophe happening, they're like, you're not sure what ports are still not flooded by, you know, the tides rising, or what places you can still find fuel, so they might run out of fuel. And
and the reason it's not necessarily like a wild goose chase is because they're receiving these intermittent sort of distress calls from what seems like the other ship.
Right, and weird, like, radar signal. So it's kind of got a weird, like, creepy vibe to it.
Yeah, it's got almost like a ghost story feel to it. And, like, it's, it was very cool.
It was very cool. And the best thing about it is the characters and how they're kind of like these environmentalists and they're, you know, peaceniks. But they're, like, changed by all this stuff, and they're forced to do, like, things that they wouldn't do before.
Yeah, to almost be like warlords, but with a very defined, you know, they're not trying to get money or things like that. They have, like, their very defined goals. They just want to get their other ship back.
Yeah.
I thought it was
fascinating.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it's really so much more interesting than most comics out there, because it's so utterly different.
It's almost a hard book to describe, although I think we did a pretty good job. Yeah,
that's pretty good.
I will say Christian Donaldson's art is
so good.
It's so good and so subdued. I feel like I know him mostly from Supermarket. I know he's done other things besides
subdued.
That. Which is not at all subdued, but he does a really great job of balancing his ability to draw sort of cartoony facial expressions, but with these sort of realistic environments, and it comes across really well.
The colors are really good too.
Yeah,
the colors are really good.
Everything seems kind of like washed out and kind of
it's got like a
damaged.
Kind of smog feel to it, like that kind of like gross orangish brown color.
Yep.
But I thought it was great.
Thrilling story. Awesome. And then in the back of it, there's like three or four pages of like information about what they're doing and like background on the people and like the disasters they've come across. And Brian Wood's known for doing this a lot in like his Channel Zero stuff, where it's like photographs that are real photographs that seem to be from the middle of this comic, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, they did that in he did that in Local as well.
Yeah,
and all that stuff was really interesting. Yeah, but definitely a cool first issue and something worth checking out.
Really good.
Our highest recommendation. Indeed. True. All right, so moving on to another kind of sci-fi-ish thing that came out, this thing is way more sci-fi than The Massive.
Kind of sci-fi?
Yeah, this is kind of sci-fi. It's called Planetoid.
It might be some robots and spaceships.
So this is Planetoid number one by Ken Gehring. This is Image, right?
Yeah.
I almost thought it was one of these new Boom things, but this is a new Image book that I think Robert Kirkman has been kind of pimping pretty hard.
Yeah, it was originally released as a webcomic, I think.
Oh, really?
Or something like that, and now they're collecting it in issues. So, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Moving on.
The issue's pretty simple. Like, the story's pretty simple. It's not really.
It reminded me a little bit of Prophet, because this guy kind of ends up on this crazy world that he knows nothing about. And there's even a part where, like, he has, like, a kit, and it shows all the stuff in his, like, in his kit. And,
But basically, he's a What is his actual job?
He's a space pirate.
He's a space pirate. Oh, yeah, he is a space pirate, isn't he? Yeah. And his ship gets pulled down into this environment. Basically, there's this planet.
The beginning of Lost.
Yeah, there's like this planet that's like basically a Bermuda Triangle of a planet.
Yeah.
And it pulls ships down. So he gets pulled down onto this planet where all these other ships have also been pulled down.
It's just a planet of junk.
Yeah, so it's basically like a giant junkyard. And once he gets down there, it's just kind of turns into this adventure story about him fighting junk monsters. And he meets this old man who kind of starts to tell him a little bit more. That part kind of, once it got to that part of the story, I got taken out of it a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, he's a little bit like, this guy's like, here is everything
like
about this comic.
Commence.
Yeah. It's like, hey, here is everything about this planet. Here's like the entire backstory of this planet. And the guy's like, oh, that's interesting. Here's my entire backstory. Which is fine, because all that stuff is interesting.
That's
but
true.
I felt like the exposition was a little on the surface there, like a little too see-through. But beyond that, I thought the dialogue was well written.
Yeah, I didn't mind, because it was a cool story.
Yeah, and I thought the art was really fun.
Art's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
He's like when he's climbing down like those cliffs that look like the treads from some giant tank or something.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's a great panel.
This giant like mechanical monsters and
the monsters are really cool looking.
And the planet's really interesting. The It's almost like the planet is a character in this, you guys.
I see.
No, but I mean, just like he does a really good job of just drawing this like giant junk planet that looks like, you know, someplace Wally would be at home. Or
yeah, you said you described it like the tech actually looks used. It's like the first Alien movie as opposed to like the squeaky clean kind of.
Yeah, like it looks very lived in, which I always think helps with sci-fi stuff. Yeah. It's like the idea that there's all this technology, but, you know, these people still live on these planets for hundreds of years.
Right.
And they look, you know, they'll probably look pretty awful, just like every place else.
True.
But I really enjoyed this first
issue.
That
was cool.
It was awesome.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, moving on to an amazing, super amazing book. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there right now. This is a Siegfried hardcover. I'm going to call this Siegfried Volume 1 because I have high hopes that the rest of these will come out in English. But this is by Alex Alice, which I don't know who
Alice
that
or Elise.
I have no idea, but I don't know that it matters. But this has been out in French for a long time. I actually have the French edition, and I had seen the animated trailer for the potential movie, which maybe we'll talk about in a little bit as well. But this first volume is fantastic.
It is the bomb of the bombs. This would like blow up other bombs.
It is the bomb, you guys. It's totally fat.
So he takes obvious inspiration from the Siegfried and Ring of the Nibelung legends, which is that a warrior named Siegfried is, you know, this is classic Wagnerian stuff where the gods are involved and there's Valkyries and Odin, dragons and, you know, dwarves making magical rings and stuff. The basic thing is that Siegfried ends up fighting a dragon. Yeah. This is based on this book. It seems to be one of a proposed trilogy.
From what I understand, it's going to be a trilogy. The second volume is already out in France, and the third volume is not.
No, I thought it was all out. All right. So this is dealing with his childhood, which I didn't know anything about. I don't know. I think he said in the back of this that he didn't do it strictly from the opera, and he's drawing his own take on it.
This is definitely not a straight adaptation of the Siegfried story from the opera at all. I think he basically says it's mixed in with some Norse mythology and things like that. Yeah. So it's born in Viking saga and Wagner's classic opera, it says on the back. But it's definitely not a straight adaptation. I mean, there are things that are I feel like going to happen that are from the opera.
Yeah, the main plot is kind of from it, like the overall.
Well, yeah, kind of.
The overall story of him going to fight this dragon that's, you know.
Yeah, but
from
all the stuff about like the wolves and stuff like that.
The wolves and the Valkyries. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. But
Yeah, so the art is the greatest thing you'll ever see in your entire life.
Yeah, I think that's actually fair.
It's some beautiful, beautiful art.
Because it's amazing, but he also, it's not just like beautiful art. He also has a really cartoony style for certain characters, like a Nibelung, who's like these magical dwarves who can make anything. Looks like it's straight out of a Pixar or Disney film from the 40s or something. And then there's like all these.
Well, this whole thing, to be honest, looks very, it has a very Disney influence on it, I feel
it's
like a darker.
But I'm
Disney.
Saying like Siegfried himself is more, I'd say almost like Akira looking, like he's much more like less Disney styled. I'm just saying like it's a very good mix of different art styles into his new whole, and it's just, I can't describe it. It's so cool. You just have to look
the,
at
the
it.
The difference between this and the Disney movie, though, this is like pretty brutal.
That's true.
It is really brutal. How would you describe the basic story of this?
Basic story of this is this boy's, basically these people are killed by Odin for doing something, you know, that Odin didn't agree with, and they escape into this area where there's no humans, and they have a son with them, and he's raised by one of these Nibelungs who are like basically like trolls, kind of, right?
Yeah,
and they live under the earth, but their king went insane, and so they're all kind of scattered, and they want somebody to kill their king, and Odin wants them to kill the king because he's crazy and dangerous,
and
so
has slowly evolved into becoming a dragon.
Yeah, and so this boy is destined to kill him, and this is about him realizing that, basically.
Yeah, but it starts literally, like Nick said, when he's just like an infant, and it covers maybe 10 or 15 years, you know, of his life, and
And a lot of the story actually ends up being about his relationship with like the wolves that live in the area around where he was raised, because he's raised by this Nibelung sort of in secrecy, and he befriends these wolves who are unfortunately all seem to meet terrible ends. But and he becomes this kind of, he's very like a like this almost feral
like Mowgli or something.
Yeah, that's what I think, like Mowgli.
Yeah,
and he's trying to find his destiny and like basically other humans because he has never seen another human and he doesn't know where they are.
Yeah. Another thing I thought was interesting was that he was told to raise this kid not knowing about the gods. So he has no idea that the gods are out there and that, you know, they're kind of pissed at his family.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the story's great. Sometimes the translation can be a little clunky, but I feel like overall it's yeah. actually pretty solid. And the art, like we said, is just
phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's so good. It's really good. Everything about this is so good.
And so that's like the first like three quarters of the book, I would say, of this collection are the one or two volumes. I think it was just one volume of the European album, and then about a third of the back stuff is kind of the story about. It seems like the movie that they were trying to make.
Mixed with inspiration that, you know, his art style, how he liked the story, like the Fritz Lang film that he drew inspiration from, and just
which
anything.
Is a great movie, by the way, if anybody can sit through a two-hour silent movie, but it's really fantastic.
And like old, like expressionist painters and like Wagner and just like anything that had to do with this, and it covers it all.
Yeah, it was like, it's like you read it and then it's like, well, if you're interested in this book, like here is all the information that you would ever want about it and about this movie that we were going to potentially make. There was like, go online. There's a trailer for this.
We will put the trailer up. It's so good.
Yeah. And the art in the back of this, like it's by different artists in the back, like the production designs for the, everything is so beautiful.
Yeah. Just buy this because if you don't buy it, then they won't put a second one out. Yeah. And I really want to get the second one. So everybody should buy this book.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Unless you really, really love dogs so much that you'll cry a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you buy it then, even.
Yeah, buy it. Just don't read it.
Just get just get somebody to put post-it notes over those scenes.
Sad scenes.
All right, so Siegfried hardcover.
Highest possible recommendation.
Highest recommendation.
The highest.
I feel like we have to let people know. We have to be very specific and let people know that book has our highest recommendation.
We've had a lot of highest recommendations lately. It's been a good few months.
It has been a good few months. And, well, I think we've been reviewing a little bit less, so we've been skipping some of the more boring things.
Yeah, that we don't have much to say about.
We'll still talk about the truly awful things, but we have been skipping some of the boring things. All right, so just a couple more books left. Mm-hmm. And the next one is... well, I don't know about this, but this is Spider-Man number 1 of 5.
Mm-hmm.
This is by Brian Michael Bendis and Sarah Pacelli.
Yep.
You don't know about this one?
I just thought it was okay.
Oh, I really liked it.
Oh, I'll let you guys talk about it then.
Well, this is written by Bendis and drawn by Pacelli, who have been doing Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yep.
They were the first Ultimate Spider-Man team of the relaunch with the new Ultimate Spider-Man.
And Bendis has been writing Ultimate Spider-Man for a long time, but this is the first time, actually, where Bendis is writing the Peter Parker Marvel Universe Spider-Man in a solo adventure, because the only time he's ever written him before has been in like
Avengers and stuff.
Yeah, but just, you know, he has like a quip here or there, like not too much. This one, you know, you see a little bit of his characterization of Peter Parker and how he's different from the ultimate version of Peter Parker, and it's very interesting. And then, you know, there's some crazy thing that happens that shoots him into this other dimension. But it's kind of interesting because it seems that there's more to this, you know, dimension hopping than just like random happenstance.
Down.
Like Mysterio's been up to something in this dimension. And so he ends up there.
Is that interesting though, or is that just like boilerplate comic stuff? Like I did think the dialogue was fun.
Yeah.
And like you said, Bendis has been writing, you know, he writes these like little quips for Spider-Man here and there and New Avengers and stuff. But I feel like that's the way he writes every single thing that Spider-Man says in this. It's like it's almost too much.
Huh.
And like I felt like the Ultimate Spider-Man stuff was solid, and the art in the whole book is great, but there was just, I don't know, there just maybe wasn't enough going on in this issue.
Well, that's the thing. This is
going
to be 5 issues, and this is the first one. And they really don't meet till near the end of this issue. And, like, so in a lot of ways, it's a setup issue.
Yeah.
But the thing I really liked about this is it takes a lot for granted that you know who Ultimate Spider-Man is. You know who, like, it doesn't really take a lot of time to explain that. I'm sure they'll recap it in issue 2 when they talk to each other a lot. But in the Ultimate Universe, Peter Parker not only is dead, but he died when he was a teenager.
Right.
And so then, you know, Miles Morales has this really complicated, you know, relationship with his parents and his uncle, who's kind of a supervillain. And so just throwing Peter Parker into that mix, I think, is already, they barely talk to each other, is fascinating. I think it's going to be really good character interactions for the two characters.
Yeah. So that's the thing I'm most interested about, the second issue. But no, I thought this issue was really fun. I thought almost everything that Spider-Man said was really funny and fun. And it was very lighthearted and not too serious. And yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see like what happens after this. Like the main beef of this, the main meat of this. Beef is a meat,
beef,
I guess.
Yeah.
Will be the
beef is a meat. So the main chicken of this.
Yeah. The introduction. The introductions to each other in the next issue, like when they meet and how they explain everything.
So that's probably it. I love the current Ultimate Spider-Man so much that I was just excited to see this happen.
I also do. I this issue just fell kind of flat for me. You're tripping.
Yeah.
So up next, we've got, I should say the best thing in here to me is like the inside front cover where it looks like Marcos Martin drew Ultimate Spider-Man, which is amazing. But all right, so up next we've got X-Men number 30. Why would we be talking about X-Men number 30, you ask?
Because we said that sometimes you don't get a lot out of the first one, so we waited 29 issues to recap and see if we still like number 30.
And we've been loving all the Dracula stuff. No. So we're reviewing X-Men number 30 because it's written by Brian Wood
of The Massive,
who wrote The Massive and who wrote the other things that we said he wrote before. So So we thought this was worth checking out, and I think we were right.
He's having a good week. We'll just put it that way.
He's having a good week. He's also writing Ultimate X-Men right now too, which we're not actually talking about.
And Conan that came out this week.
Oh yeah,
it is this week.
It's a Brian Wood week.
It is Brian Wood week.
Four comics this week. But yeah, X-Men, it's the start of a new kind
story
of
arc.
Yeah, it seems a little bit like it continues some of the stuff from the previous, because I was a little confused. They were talking about some stuff that I didn't know what was happening, you know?
Yeah, me neither.
I was like, what? And this team is kind of weird because it's just a weird team. It's like Storm, Colossus, Domino, Pixie, and Psylocke. It's kind of a weird mix of people. But, you know, he does a good job of introducing each character and giving them their own distinct personality and not just making them feel like, you know, angsty X-Men. Yeah, and there's an interesting story introduced here with some monsters start appearing, and you know, that's about it. It's pretty much a straight up setup. Oh, one of the other interesting dynamics in here that they introduced was that Storm, who's leading this branch of the X-Men, is kind of hiding stuff from Cyclops and doing her own thing, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was like Pixie and Storm interacting, and they're both just had really good dialogue.
Yeah,
like the rest of the characters, I barely knew some of them, and I didn't get much out of them. But yeah, I think those two were really
Psylocke
good together.
Psylocke and Domino get a little bit of a short shrift here, but
yep. But
sure, but it's, you know, you can't spend the whole issue introducing characters,
because
there's a lot of incident in this. Basically, there's this monster that's attacking, and they find out that it's rotting from the inside, and they're kind of investigating and trying to figure out what's going on. And then there are other even more gigantic monsters that they have to fight at the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just monster fighting, but it's, like you said, the dialogue is really good. I mean, it's Brian Wood.
And the pacing felt really fast on
this. Yeah, the pacing
was cool.
The pacing was great. That was my main thing with this issue. Like, there's a really good balance of action and character moments, and I thought he nailed that. And it's, you know, to just jump into a book and, as you know, a reader, I'm just jumping into this too. Like, I haven't read X-Men since I think issue like 3 or 4, because I didn't really care for it.
Yeah, it's stunk. But the art's actually great too.
Yeah.
Yeah, David Lopez, who has drawn other things, and I can't remember what those things are right now.
Either.
But it's a pretty straightforward, simple art style. I mean, it's not like
it's kind of close to Mike McCone. If you like Mike McCone, it's kind of like that.
Yeah, but maybe a little more lively than Mike McCone or something. But yeah, I think it's worth checking out.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'd say at this moment, almost every X-Men book is like at least
good
solid
to great.
They're all pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even X-Men Legacy is now pretty good with Christos Gage. I think we talked about that when he took that over.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
crazy.
Yeah, good X-Men books.
Good week.
Yeah. And that's about it, I think, for this week.
We're done.
We are done. So if you guys have any questions, you should send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. Questions or comments or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Whatever you get.
And or you can call our podcast hotline at 1-703-539-CAST.
And you can tweet us at Big Planet Comics.
Or you could even post on Facebook. Whatever works for you.
Or you can just do whatever you want. You just listen to the podcast.
That'd be great, too.
As long as you do that.
Also,
and we're going to do a live podcast. We should say
don't
that.
Forget.
That's what I was about to say.
That's what Nick was about to say, you guys. June 27th at 8 p.m. Come
maybe,
on.
Maybe 8:15.
Yeah, whatever.
Come hang out.
But get, you can get here at 8.
Try to get here at 8.
Get a good seat.
Yeah, let us know that you're coming because we're sad because we don't think anybody's going to actually come. Yeah. Or at least I don't think
so. We need to do a Facebook event or something.
We should do it. Yeah, it's just in a couple weeks. But anyway, we'll see you guys next time.